Hello, we're here. Welcome back to House of Court. I cannot tell you the sinister face Emma is making me as I try and do this intro calmly and semi-professionally. Emma Bunnell, hello.
Hello, Charlotte. How are you?
Well, I was fine until you made a face that's going to haunt my dreams for months to come.
Well, it was only because you told me I couldn't sing, so I was just wondering how many times I can bring singing into this first episode back.
I'm just thinking of our lovely, lovely listeners who I hope had a wonderful summer. Not a politics-free summer, but, we'll get into all of that. How's your summer been?
Busy, I think it's fair to say. I think, yes, I was telling you last night, I've been working basically 16, 17 hour days for the last few weeks. And I should point out that this is how dedicated I am to my craft, that when I did have a week's break, which was wonderful, I had it in the heart of democracy in Athens.
Yeah, that just sums up the kind of person you are. I did, after the Olympics, have a staycation because I was also a broken woman, but we're here. We're sort of revitalised. We're ready to go. There's lots to discuss. And I kind of want to start by asking you a broad question, if you don't mind. And
sure.
It can only be this way around because you are the Labour supporter. How do you feel the first couple of months of a Labour government have gone, the so-called honeymoon period? And I ask with no, it's not a loaded question. I'm genuinely interested in your take.
So first of all, I'm going to reiterate something I said in the column a while ago, that I hate the whole concept of honeymoon periods.
Yeah, and you said that on this show as well.
I just think it's a silly, nonsense way of looking at things. Look, how's it going? I think their message has largely landed that whatever terrible things we do, it's all the Tories' fault. They have Osborne'd the hell out of that shit. Fair play. Osborne did it very successfully. I don't see why we shouldn't. They clearly are having, particularly this week, some real teething problems with the handbrake turn that it is going from being in opposition and saying everything is you're doing everything wrong to we're doing everything right. And that there are real teething problems with that. The briefing has to stop. I don't have a dog in the fight between whoever the multitude of players are that are briefing against each other, but it is just not how you run the competent professional government that Keir Starmer keeps promising. What you're mostly getting is office gossip in the pages of the newspapers.
Well, I guess that brings on to the main thing we want to talk about, which is the stuff. Well, I want to talk about is the stuff around this kind of, free gear.
So, can I just add something to that? Because on the more positive note. So there are two questions. There's the politics of it all, which I think they're having some teething problems with. There's the policy of it all, which I'm mostly quite happy with. Of the 40 bills in the King's Speech, I think there's just some brilliant stuff in there that I've been wanting to see from Labour government for a lot longer than there hasn't been one, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are some stuff that no one wants to do, like the winter fuel allowance. I think they could have messaged that better. I think they could have sequenced it better. I think there probably is, I don't know this from internal knowledge or anything, but I suspect there's a discussion being had about how to reduce bills more widely, things like a social tariff, for example, which I think someone mentioned on the radio and then got sharply slapped down for. But I think that you go social tariff, then you end the winter fuel allowance rather than the other way around. But overall, I think the policy bit is where I'm excited and the politics bit is where I'm a bit like, oh, for God's sake, guys, get your act together. Now, people like
Can
me...
I just say... That is the most Emma Bunnell answer you've ever given on this show.
Yeah, that's fair. That is totally, totally fair. As I said, the most Emma Bunnell thing is that I probably go, oh, mates, get the bloody politics together. But what eventually matters is the policy. But you can't just do policy in a vacuum. You've got to message it right. And I think they are struggling with that a bit.
Almost like you do this for a living.
Right. I suspect that we're going to see a bit more sunlit uplands next week.
Right, this is what I want to come on to. Because, yes, the coalition government did absolutely the same. You're 100% right. And I think, frankly, overplayed it. They did it for too long as well, I think.
Well, yeah, weren't they running around with Paul Liam Byrne's note like
Oh,
at this election?
Greg Hands did, and it looked ridiculous. Yeah. I think it was Greg Hands. But I'm even talking about at a more legitimate
Yeah.
period of time. And I think it is fine, and every government does it, and it's perfectly reasonable to blame the other lot for certain things. I do think Starmer and Rachel Reeves have been far too miserable, and I think people don't like it.
I think people voted for change,
Yes.
and you don't vote for change without a certain amount of hoping for optimism.
Right.
So I think that's absolutely right. My guess is the calculation is do the misery now, bring the optimism later. But I just think it's been a bit too heavy-handed. I agree with you.
Yeah, I really think it's been a bit like, just stop being so bloody miserable.
Although, I mean, let's face it, again, I come you you know come back to the fact that we're weird.
Sure.
We think it's been heavy-handed because we've
Do you
just
want to be
heard it day
specific about
out.
that, or is
I
it just a
mean,
general statement?
very, very difficult to be specific in all the many, many different ways that we're weird.
Fine.
Politics is mediated through the media. That's like literally the name. And the journalists are the ones saying, I'm so bored of this narrative, I'm so bored of this narrative after 3 seconds. I don't know yet how voters are feeling, whether they feel that they've heard this too much already. I doubt it because they won't have barely heard it at all. They've been on the
Maybe,
summer holidays.
maybe if there's a bit of that. I do think there is a general feeling, though. And again, it might just be consuming too much. I'm not sure, though. I do think there is a general sense of misery that they should try to change, because I think people don't want, people have had a hard time since what, 2008? They don't want to be told there's more horrible coming.
No, I mean, I've been thinking about this, and if I ever, ever, ever stop working, sorry, peek behind the curtains, folks at home. I was working at 1:30 a.m. and I was up again doing it again at 7 a.m.
You look beautiful for it.
Oh, bless your heart. Yeah, she's lying through her teeth, but she's very good at it. Anyone would think she's in politics or something.
No one can see you, so it's fine.
What I would like to set out in my newsletter is that what they need the sense of is that reformation, because there have been two kind of key tropes to a lot of what's been happening. Everything is broken, no sticking plaster politics. And then, of course, we say no sticking plaster politics, and then we all get up in arms about a policy, a single thing. The winter fuel allowance is the obvious example. Now, the winter fuel allowance was in its own way, and it was brought in under Gordon Brown, so I'm not being partisan here, a sticking plaster politics. It is essentially a direct transfer from the government to the energy companies.
To then make my energy cheaper to the pensioners.
To make energy cheaper to pensioners, but not to hurt the pockets of shareholders in the process of doing so. So it instead of saying you have to offer cheaper bills to energy companies, it said, oh, you can offer whatever bills you want and we'll take up the cost of that.
Right. That's a, yeah, okay.
So there are better ways of managing that process longer term, but it is a long-term project. And what they need is a narrative that says this is the journey that we're on. It's a long journey, but there will be good milestones because that's essential. And this is the country that we're aiming to be. When I try to
But you
get.
see, sorry, I have not heard that second bit at all. It's just been miserable.
Absolutely. No, this is what I'm saying they need to do. I'm
Right.
not saying they have done. This is what I want to hear next week. When I try to teach campaigners how to do theory of change, I always make them do this incredibly hard thing. which is describe the world as it exists when you've achieved your goals. And campaigners find that incredibly hard because they are doing people. They're all about the verbs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, nope, no verbs, just adjectives. And I want some adjectives in this speech. I don't want just Labour is going to, but when Labour has, your life will feel like. And that is what I think is missing.
I do think this speech from Starmer is a very big moment, because if he and Rachel Reeves are on the stage for another week just being miserable, I suspect that, never mind the public getting fed up with it, his MPs will get a bit fed up with it. And then the sort of briefings that you pointed out at the beginning of the show will get worse.
Yeah. Well, the briefings aren't coming from MPs. It's all internal office politics.
Sure, but then I think it could expand to MPs as well.
When I say the briefings are, there are the usual suspects, but they are at the moment confined to the usual suspects.
So let's get into some of that and free gear, Keir. I'm looking at a thing from Sam Coates. Top 10 MPs accepting gifts since December 2019. So Keir Starmer, 107,145 worth of gifts. Lucy Powell is next on just over 40 grand, and so on and so forth. Number eight is Lib Dem leader Ed Davey, or best part of 17 grand. Interesting.
Is that all jet skis and
we're coming on to that. Don't worry, we're coming on to that. And I'm going to be writing about it as well. Don't worry, we're coming on to it. There's about three, four different bits to this story from my take. So first of all, I understand why people in various sectors, including journalism, sometimes you get offered free stuff and it's rather nice.
Oh, yeah.
I went to Malta
once on a freebie. It was great.
I am not averse to a freebie. Let me just get that out. Okay. Obviously, in politics, it has a different connotation, right?
Yeah, I think it does for two reasons. First of all, there's the substantial reason, which is people aren't giving you free stuff for nothing, as it were.
Sure.
And they are hoping to persuade you of their arguments, less with the substance of their arguments and more with the substance of their gift.
Of course.
And you can be as convinced as you like that that's not going to work for you, but that is what they are trying to do. And there's a reason they've got that budget towards it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like advertising. You know, there's a reason. Like when I was talking on the TV the other day about this potential junk food ban before the watershed.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, oh, yeah, well, no one's going to go to McDonald's just because they saw an advert. And I'm like, well, there is a reason that they have a massive marketing budget.
Oh, how many times it doesn't matter what brand it is. I've definitely seen food and drink on the TV and I'm like, I really want
a Big Mac. Yeah.
It's happened to all of us.
Other burgers are available.
They are.
But the less substantial thing, but the more political thing, is the sniff test.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Starmer has made quite a big play of not being Boris Johnson. And you know, I don't think he is. I mean,
well,
Wallpaper gate aside, mm-hmm. So I think Labour went too hard on wallpaper gate if they are then going to have specs and dresses. But I mean, the Boris Johnson thing went a lot deeper and was, you know, fundamentally characterised by things like Partygate. And before that, the whole Darius Guppy thing.
You know, sure, but
years and years and years of the kind of behaviour that disqualifies you from office, not that looks a bit shit. I freely admit, looks a bit shit. And they shouldn't do it because the paid benefit of the stuff that you get does not weigh in the positive favour against the downside.
So I have no problem with the wife of the Prime Minister being looked after, to look a bit nice in public, to, you know, if nothing else, to try and stop people making snarky comments about her. I understand that probably Sir Keir Starmer cannot sit in the North Bank at Arsenal.
But I think that must be so hard. Like, if that's something, so I've just been listening to Bob Mortimer's book, which I cannot recommend highly enough, by the way.
Okay.
It's so lovely. And he reads it joyously. And a lot of...
I have a big Rachel Mortimer
fan. A moment when he was watching Middlesbrough, his team, and it brought him out of a depression he'd been in for years.
Middlesbrough? Of all the teams to get you out of a depression... Anyway, carry on, sorry.
As you know, I cannot comment with any sort of authority. I know how important football is to Keir Starmer, and to have lost that must be so hard. So I can totally see why accepting the VIP box tickets is the best possible compromise for him in what it gives to him and his mental health, frankly. But again, like, you've just got to ask, you've got to go 5 years without. I'm sorry.
No, I actually don't think you do. I think it's perfectly fine if they say for security, you need to sit in the director's box, not in the usual stand. I think having a private box gifted to you is pushing your luck.
Yeah,
for example.
Okay, fair. Well, that's a decent compromise. There you go. We've solved it. We should be working in number 10.
I saw someone put it on Twitter and I agree with it. I actually, this is quite funny. I actually sit at, when I go to Spurs, near someone,
I mean,
quite...
Can I just say that as a Spurs fan, slagging off a Middlesbrough is just, you know...
Well, there's levels. anyway, I sit next to quite a famous person, and I also...
Listeners, you should know that I took a total pump with that.
Yeah.
I have no idea whether that was actually going to land.
I'm making a semi-serious point here, in that next to a quite famous person, and at least one MP sit where I sit at Spurs. There have been more at various times. But they're, you know, not French bench MPs. I think one might... Anyway, I'll be careful what I say. But the point is, they were entitled to go to that as their break, and the security meant they could sit in the slightly nicer bit, quite reasonably. They're not particularly high-profile people. It was fine. I resent him being an Arsenal fan, but I think there's, you know, these are the type of things where there's compromise. I think the more interesting thing is, I think it looks a bit pathetic to have someone buy your clothes and glasses, particularly when you're on a decent salary and have already made money.
I agree, although I have to say those glasses are really good glasses on him.
Well, listen, I think were it Boris Johnson or Rishi Sunak doing this, the result, the criticism would be absolutely the same.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to make partisan points on this. I think what we're seeing is...
I'm desperately trying to wind you up. You're being very well behaved.
I know, I'm terrible. I'm knackered. Surely I should be maybe much easier to wind up.
Yeah, I know. Don't worry. We're carrying on. So
I mean, the thing is, Charlotte, where you and I differ is on how policy, right? We kind of generally agree on how politics can and should be done.
Sure.
I mean, we've had, I think, one big fight on this podcast that was about how politics and how it can and should be done. But other than that, we've kind of generally agree on that area.
Yeah, generally, that's probably true. But I do think there's something a little bit naff about all that. You know, we could also go into all different arguments about, well, again, I think you and I probably agree that, you know, MPs and the Prime Minister and ministers should be paid more. Mm. There should be budgets for, you know, the partners of Prime Ministers. Like, you know, Lady Victoria Starmer is perfectly entitled to look nice in public, and so that people don't make horrible comments about her not looking. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. I was thinking about that time when the lovely Sarah Millican wore an M&S dress, I think it was, very nice, perfectly lovely M&S dress to a film premiere.
Mm.
And she was so happy with the way she looked when she left the house, and she was just slagged off to high heaven because it wasn't a bit of designer gear. And that is the kind of pressure that Lady Starmer's under. And that's just the case. It's a bloody stupid pain in the arse, and it's gendered and it's appalling. But that is the world in which she's having to live.
And I also think it's perfectly acceptable that people that are representing your country, from the Prime Minister and his wife to David Lammy to Rachel Reeves, are sort of made, help to look presentable to do that job. I think the fact some of it is a bit of the parochial way we deal in British politics, because think about how American politics operates. Also, just on this, just between you and I think
okay.
I'm...
Okay, no one's listening, Charlotte, don't worry.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm fully in my M&S era.
Oh, welcome to the club. No, I'm not.
I turned 37 this couple of weeks ago. I think I've got to embrace it.
Have you bought a bra there yet?
Babe, I've never bought a bra anywhere else. I'm not insane.
I have a very, well, no, let's not go into the details.
No, let's not. No, but I'm just saying I'm in my M&S phase. I'm embracing it.
Absolutely. I shall wear purple, but it shall be from M&S.
Quite. Anyway, just your Sarah Millican story got me thinking of that. So I think there is a perception thing here, not about me wearing M&S, but about the way you conduct yourself. People in public do not like the idea that you're sort of slightly taking the piss, slightly on a freebie. Yeah. And I think that's reasonable.
And I think it does. The problem is, however much the individual actions are not meant in such a way or not thought of in such a way, it just adds to that one rule for them, one rule for the rest of us.
107 now, grand.
I think one rule for us and one rule for the rest of them itself has degrees. I think that taking a free dress at one end is different from breaking COVID rules at the other, whether that be Boris Johnson or whoever, that
SNP,
Scottish, SNP, Margaret something, I think her name was.
Yeah.
So, Ferrier, there you go.
Very good.
I get there in the end. But when you are leading a government that wants, at some part of its ambition, stated ambition, is to change the way people feel about politics, you are going to have to do that from a very, very selfishly austere perspective, I think.
And I'm sorry, the sanctimony in opposition means there's no room for manoeuvre here.
But I think deeper than that, there was sanctimony from opposition.
A lot.
And you're right. What worries me more than that is that they didn't get that this would then be a story.
Right. Well, you've guided me beautifully onto the next bit, which is...
Just before we leave the next bit,
yeah,
I would like to correct an impression that the listeners may have accidentally got. Charlotte, could you please tell our lovely listeners what words it says on the T-shirt that you are currently wearing?
I think it says mental health.
There you go. So M&S you may be, but you're still metal.
Yeah, well, this is a T-shirt. Actually, I'm very happy to share this. This is a T-shirt I bought at a festival a while ago that is a heavy metal mental health charity.
Brilliant.
There we go. They were in I think it's based in Northern Ireland. Anyway, so moving on from this, the other big rumpus, and talking about being sensitive to what a story is and isn't, Sue Gray, Sir Keir Starmer's chief of staff, now earns more than the Prime Minister on 170k. Now, I am very happy for people to earn as much as they want. I'm really happy for women to stick up for themselves and earn what they're worth. But this is a really stupid thing to have done.
No, I disagree. Well,
oh, come on.
I disagree. No, I do disagree on this one. What's more stupid is that the Prime Minister's the question isn't should Sue Gray earn 170k for the kind of level of job she's at? She could walk into something and double that elsewhere outside of government, right? More importantly, the way it's always framed is she earns more than the Prime Minister. And we never ask, should the Prime Minister earn more? We just ask, should she earn less than the Prime Minister?
Well, I'm perfectly comfortable with the idea that politicians of all levels should probably earn more on the basis that you might attract a higher caliber of person. Just for the record, the Prime Minister earns £166,786.
Yeah.
So Sue Gray's on 4 grand.
I'm about 3K more, yeah.
Yeah, 3, 4 grand more. Fine. And it's important to note that is more than £3,000 more than her predecessor, Liam, now Lord Booth Smith. I believe.
I can tell you that I
Sorry.
took over from Liam, now Lord Booth Smith, at a previous job, and he did not, unless at least if he did, then I didn't earn anything like that at that job.
No, sorry, I'm wrong. He earned 140 to 145 grand as chief of staff. It's 3 grand more than the prime minister. So it's about 30 grand more than her predecessor. So like a meaningful amount more.
Yeah, I mean, look how well Liam did.
No, that's not the point.
I mean, it's sort of the point. You
No, it
believe in
really
free market
isn't.
economics.
I
You
do, but
pay for quality, right?
well, maybe, but I think there's also something going on about the fact that she's earning this. And have I read right that she's also on the committee that decides some of this pay?
That I don't know.
I
I'm not
think
going to
I saw
speak to that.
something
I
on
don't know.
the.
I look. I think when we're talking about the figures, I don't think we're talking about the principal. She's a senior civil servant or an ex-senior civil servant,
Yeah, she's now a political
and she's
appointment.
now a political appointment. The amount that she's on is not an unusual salary at the very high levels of the civil service. She was brought in to earn what she's used to. The part of the problem is actually that a lot of the people who've moved over into the sort of political twilight area, that
Which is a
means they're
whole
not
other
working
interesting.
for the Labour Party, but are working as special advisers. Special advisers earn less than they did when they were at the party, and that's causing quite a lot of consternation. Again, I don't want to make, unlike certain briefers who shall remain nameless,
Name and shame.
by all accounts, Simon Case.
I wish you hadn't done that. I should never have encouraged you.
I don't want to make this all about Sue Gray. I think we should talk about, like, what is the problem
No.
with Sue? No, what is the problem with the Prime Minister's advisor earning £170,000? What is the fundamental problem that you have with it?
I think there's a problem that it's more than the Prime Minister. I think it is not an unreasonable standard to set that the person paid the most in government on the political side is the Prime Minister. If civil servants want to do this, like, think about what, I don't know, council chief executives earn. It's much more than the Prime Minister in some cases. So I think that's
Yeah,
all fine.
okay, but I come back to that sniff test we were just talking about. Now raise the Prime Minister's salary.
I think you should.
Well, you might think we should, but would you do it right now politically?
Oh no, it'd be a political disaster, but I think in principle,
Well,
isn't
there you
it?
go. So you're basically stuck between a rock and a hard place. You can't pay the person the salary, the person you want in the job that you think can do the job really well and will therefore serve their country as the best possible person to do that job. The amount that you think that and they think they should earn, because you can't have it more than your salary, and your salary is capped both politically and legislatively. I mean, that's the bind they're in. That's ultimately the bind that
It
we're
is a
in.
bind, but that's the reality. And I think
So you
I.
either say, well, we won't take the talent, but because it looks bad. Or you take the talent and take the bad look.
Do you think genuinely think Sue Gray wouldn't
That
take the?
that's the choice
But do you
ultimately, isn't
genuinely
it?
think Sue Gray wouldn't have taken the job for 165k?
I don't know, but there are people who will make that calculation, definitely. And if you want to attract that talent, and they're saying to you, I won't take it for, it's not so much I won't take it for 5 grand less. That's not generally the calculation. You and I both know that the calculation is usually, I won't take a cut in wages. That makes, you know, the psychological hit of taking a cut in your wages is extremely, is often much harder than the financial hit when you're talking about that level.
Was this a cut from her civil service salary?
Well, I don't know, but I'm saying that's possibly completely likely.
I haven't
likely.
Heard that it is. I just think this is another example, a bit like the sniff test for the clothes and everything else, that was a silly mistake that didn't need to be happened. Can I just read you the fantastic quote in this story?
Go on.
One source told the BBC, it was suggested that she, Sue Gray, might want to go for a few thousand pounds less than the Prime Minister to avoid this very story. She declined. Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, she can be, from what I understand it, she's quite an obstinate person.
No, and, surely not.
I mean, sometimes in politics that's extremely helpful, but you need to be able to take soundings as well as, say, as stick to your guns. And balancing that can be a tricky thing. There is clearly a deeper and bigger briefing war going on here.
Yes.
And frankly, I just want to knock everyone's heads together.
I can understand why, but...
That's the bit that I'm frustrated about. So I looked at a job at the party. There was quite an interesting role going. I would not have been paid £170,000 for it, just before anyone wonders. And really, I really did consider going for it. And then I was just constant briefings against each other. And I thought, I don't want to go work in that. That just sounds horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, you know, yes, there are issues around not attracting talent for the right salaries, but there are also issues around not attracting talent because it all sounds like such a bloody cesspit.
Sure, sure. I just think this story is a mess, whether it cuts through to anyone.
I don't disagree that it's a mess. I think my point is what my point always is. It's one thing to identify a mess. It's another thing to actually have a workable solution. And
well, the solution was earn 164 grand.
But again, I don't want to make it about this role because the solution isn't. I mean, I know you're a liberal and everything's individualism with you.
Sure.
But
we haven't even talked about Ed Dave in his jet ski. We're running out of time.
No, we are running out of time because I have to go back to all the work. But I just think, what we need is not a this is what Sue Gray should do, but a this is how this should work as a concept, as an organisation. And that is the bit, the conversation that no one's having, because it's so much more interesting to talk about who's bitching about whose salary.
Yeah, it is much more interesting. That's why we're doing it.
I know, I'm so dull.
Just 2 seconds, because we don't have time to discuss this. First of all, the Lib Dem conference. I'm going to do a whole other thing about why the Lib Dems need to actually realise they're an opposition party and should, at least in some part, try and hold the government to account instead of obsessing about the Conservatives. But we'll do that another time if it continues. Part of the Keir Starmer story that we delve into is the presence of this Lord Waheed Ali, who I didn't know anything about, really. But I read a really good Bloomberg profile of him. He is the most fascinating character.
I don't know him. I've met him, I think, once or twice, but I don't know him at all.
I just found him the most fascinating character. I think probably, again, they're playing a bit with fire in the way this is operating. I think there's all sorts of things that wouldn't pass your sniff test, including a pass into Downing Street.
Yeah.
But this is a fascinating character. I think he was the youngest peer when he was ennobled. He was the first gay Muslim peer when he was ennobled. He worked in the media. I have to say, he sounds like a really fascinating character.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great character to have around, and I think he has loads and loads of value. But somebody somewhere has to have the dudes. Think about how that looks, role.
Right.
And at the moment, I think that's missing.
Right, thank you for making the point I wanted to make. I think there has been a level of naivety in these first weeks of government that everything is... And I think it looks particularly bad when you're as sanctimonious and pious in opposition as this Labour Party was.
I mean, I think they had a lot to be sanctimonious about, frankly. But yes, I agree that naivety is exactly the right word for what the last few weeks have felt like.
Emma Bunnell, we're back. Let's
Also, I think, can we just say again a little sneak behind the curtain for our listeners? One of the reasons that we haven't spent ages discussing Lib Dems is that you and I had a text exchange, and it's like, did anything happen? And I was like, as far as I was aware, there was a jet ski and glee club, and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I think.
We'll, I know they were very, 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 very happy.
They were very, very happy.
They deserved it.
Yeah. We will be back. Obviously, there'll be paid episodes. Make sure you head to Patreon to do that. There are going to be more freebie episodes because there's so much politics to discuss. Well, I'm not quite sure what we're going to do with Emma at Labour Party conference. I just hope she makes it back in one piece. And if she does, we'll see you next week.